Well, we can explain in detail now, thanks to the work of a guy called Alan Mills in Leicester University in England, who has explained the process in great detail. Because the shroud was carbon dated in 1988, and remembering that the Roman Catholic Church has never said that it's a genuine cloth, because they know its origin, and they allowed it to be carbon dated by three world authorities, which said that it dated from 1260 to 1350, I think it was, bang on the timing that we were expecting. A lot of people have consistently said, oh, it's a mistake, it's the image of Jesus because it looks like Jesus. But of course, Jacques de Molay wore his hair in the style of a Nazarite. They weren't allowed to cut their beards, they wore their hair to shoulder length. So he would have, and with a centre parting, he's believed to have had a centre parting, he would have looked in that way. But we know he was laid on a soft bed, and we know that he was alive because that image couldn't exist if he wasn't. On the shroud image, people have said it's a fake because the proportions are wrong. The hands are down here, and you know, unless you were some sort of gorilla, if you lied on a slab, your hands, if you could cross them, would be up here. But the reason that they're down here is because he's in a soft bed. His knees were slightly bent, his shoulders were supported, he had a 16 degree bend, which is doing exactly what I'm doing, what a soft bed would do. But that image, some people have said it's a photograph. It couldn't be a photograph. Because it's a contact print. It actually shows the full height. If you imagine a shroud on me as I do that, it would record the full detail of my full height, but yet I would be bent. So you would have a full height image of with a bent physiology, which is a very unique situation. So it couldn't be a photograph. Some people have said it's a painting. Well, it couldn't be, because the image is one molecule thick. No painter can achieve that. There is paint on the shroud, but that's from the 50-odd recorded copyists that made copies of it and then laid it onto the shroud so that the holiness could impart into their copy. So how did the thing happen? Because there's nothing else like it, is there? It's a sort of unique piece of imagery that even NASA couldn't explain. Well, it's not unique. It's unique in terms of human image, but it happens all the time with plants. Samples in a herbarium that are kept for 50, 60, 100 years will have an image of the plant beneath it. An image that is captured within the first few seconds, but that takes many decades to arrive, and it must be kept in the dark for that period of time. It's called a Voigtlinger pattern, where the oxygen-free radicals on the on the skin of this person that was covered in lactic acid that leave the body, and that they can maintain this free state, because oxygen is normally two molecules, it's O2, it can't sustain O1 for more than a tiny period of time, in fact to travel 4.5 centimetres from a warm human body. But it carried these charged particles, which gave up their energy as they reunited, which scorched the cloth, which set up a chain reaction that took at least 50 years to get to a visible state. And it had to be in a dark place. Now, that's exactly what happened, because Jacques de Molay was arrested and tortured alongside Geoffrey de Charnay, a leading Templar in Normandy. And he also was burnt alongside him 7 years later. They were both burnt outside Notre Dame Cathedral on the Seine in Paris in 1314. But where did the shroud first come on display? In 1357, exactly 50 years after the arrest and torture of Molay, it was produced from the Charnay family, from the family of the man who had been alongside him, because we believe that the Charnays were brought in to nurse these two back to health so that they could stand trial, because the Inquisition weren't going to nurse them back to health. So they took the shroud off. There would be no image on it, just blood. So they washed it, put it away. And 50 years later, another Geoffrey de Charnay was killed at the Battle of Poitiers. And his widow was left penniless, and she was trying to sell everything in the house, and she was pulling everything out. She pulled out this shroud, opened it up, and realised there was a face on it, in negative, of course. She opened it up, and there was the image of a crucified person. Immediately put it on display in the church, which made a lot of money. She was told by the church to stop displaying it and to destroy it. She refused, and eventually managed to get control of the situation through a very clever movements of marrying somebody who was the uncle of the Pope and protecting her ownership of this shroud, which she almost certainly knew the origin of. But this was extremely threatening to the church, because at this time the Black Death was sweeping the world. It annihilated huge amounts of China. In Europe, it killed a third to half of every country. I've even been told that it annihilated large numbers of people in this country when it was taken over by Templars. So the disease ravaged the whole world, and people were losing confidence in the church. The church had got splits with popes, anti-popes, and they were losing their grip. God was punishing the whole world. What was the church doing? There was a great yearning for the years of the Templars. When Jacques de Molay was burnt at the stake, they collected his ashes and kept them as a powerful relic, holy relic. And he had cursed the Pope and King Philip as he was burnt, and both had died pretty mysteriously and pretty quickly afterwards. No doubt Philip was assisted in some way. The Pope died of pancreatic cancer. But he was laid out in state in the church, and that night the church was struck by fire, and his body was almost entirely consumed by the flames before they could put it out, which, of course, the word spread that Molloy had got his revenge by roasting the Pope. It is quite spooky. So there was a whole cult of the Templars sort of coming up again. And of course, the worst thing that could happen is that people could learn that he was this second Messiah, if you like, held the same job. And miraculously, his image was appearing on this cloth. And he had been crucified by the church, by the Inquisition, that was part of the church. Things would not look good for them at all. So they had to suppress the whole story. And the quickest way of doing that was to let people believe it was the image of Jesus Christ. So they suddenly did a flip. From denying that it was, they didn't say it was, but they suddenly stepped back and just let people get on with it and assume it for themselves. Now, the Templars went to Scotland, and after this arrest, the ones that escaped went to Scotland, and it's said that they helped Robert the Bruce win the Battle of Bannockburn, which was being lost against the English, when suddenly a lot of knights charged in and saved the day. And it's been said by many people that was a Templar action to support the Scots. But there is a document, the Lamentius document, in France, which records that the Templars didn't die out in Paris either, that there was immediately a new Grand Master in secret elected, and that continued from 1307 through till perhaps as late as 1805. And there was a reemergence of the Scottish tradition and the French tradition at the time of Bonnie Prince Charlie, when I think the whole thing was reconstructed and there were additions made to Masonic rituals. The original French Templars cursed the Scottish Templars as cowards that ran away. So there was quite a divide between them. But we understood that, from what we investigated, that there were the 33 degrees of the ancient Scottish rite of Freemasonry were dramatically changed between 1717 and 1813, and that the original rituals contained something that should be interesting to us, to put it mildly. and we tried to find those rituals. Now, when we'd finished our first book, published our first book, The Harem Key, we got fantastic reception from scholars of all types, biblical scholars, even from a lot of churchmen, including a Catholic bishop, and from Freemasons all over the place. But there was one exception. The Grand Lodge of Scotland thought it wonderful, but the United Grand Lodge of England didn't like it one little bit. They are considered to be the founding Grand Lodge in the world, starting in 1717. Strange that there are minutes of Scottish Lodge meetings going back to 1598. But it's an easy way of dealing with that, you know. If you don't look, they may not be there. There are minutes of James VI of Scotland being made a Freemason. He's the man that brought them to England, because in 1603 he became James I of England. And he brought Freemasonry down from Scotland to England, and it became very important. Now, Freemasonry was very Scottish, very Stuart, Jacobite. And in 1715, the first Jacobite rebellion, as it's called by the English, the uprising of the Scots against the English when they invaded England, took place. And the Scottish lodges of Freemasons were gathering funds to buy weapons to fight the English. So 2 years later, the English declared that they got their own Grand Lodge, the Grand Lodge of London. They had to do that because to say you were a Freemason at that time was equivalent to saying, I am a Jacobite, I am a traitor, come and hang me. So they had to deny their Scottish origins. They also set about changing the rituals to ensure that there could be no connection. And unfortunately for them, their own records even predate 1717, but they deny their own records, and they've set about changing their own history, really Orwellian, and they really despise people probing back, as we have done. And we found, reading books by previous Masonic investigators and scholars of the last century, have all had the same problems from these people in London who are protecting what is essentially a gentleman's club, Hanoverian London, under the wee German laddie, as the Scots called him, had a completely different view. Then they tried to destroy all of the information that was in Freemasonry and set up something that is stuffy, starchy, and a little pointless, in my opinion. Whereas in Scotland, it retained its freshness. But they used their influence to have the rituals changed worldwide. People like Albert Pike here in the United States made huge changes to ritual here as well. So the original 33 degrees of the ancient Scottish Rite became lost and buried. And the original secret of Freemasonry was almost destroyed, its purpose lost.